Hi, guys. This is Karen Kelski of The Professor's Inn. In light of the current COVID-19 crisis, we're teaming up with Himalaya to show our support. From April 1st through the end of May, Himalaya will match the exact dollar amount for every active subscriber to our premium channel and donate that to direct relief to support our healthcare workers. So go to your app store, download the Himalaya app, search for The Professor's Inn, and subscribe to our premium channel. Let's fight this pandemic together. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is Kel from The Professor is In. I am the productivity coach and the interview support system for The Professor is In, and we welcome you as always.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski of The Professor is In, and I'm glad you're here with us today, especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Right. If you can attend to an entire podcast.
Or even part of one.
Starting one. Shout out to you.
Yeah.
That's actually a little bit of what we want to talk about today. We're going to talk about things we're holding in tension as an organization and as two people trying to figure out how best to support academics in this process. So we're walking this line between reminding you, you are stuck at home in a global pandemic, trying to get some work done. So trying to get you to give up this idea that this is going to be your grand productive time. Simultaneously, we want to give you strategies for getting the things you want to get done, done. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about some of those things today. In particular, talking about an interesting article that came out in the Chronicle of Higher Education called COVID-19 and the Academic Parent. And it's by Trisslyn Nelson and Jessica Early, and it came out on the 27th of April. So you can look at the whole article there, but we're going to talk about that and then weave it in a little bit about what I've been finding working with the writing groups that I've been working with for the last, I guess it's been 6-7 weeks now, as part of Unstuck. I'm meeting with writers every day and seeing what they're struggling with and in particular, the myth-making that's going on. That's the fascination to me.
Yeah. And I'm not on those calls, the things you just mentioned on Unstuck, which right. is your thing. Right. But I am on social media all the time because I do quite a bit of The Professor's Inn social media content. And on Twitter, I just keep seeing day after day after day, one academic after another saying, you know, issuing some plaintive plea out to the Twitter sphere of, I'm not really getting much work done and I don't know why. And is anyone else finding this hard right now? And I try to leap in every time and say, nobody should be expecting themselves to get work done and have your higher order cognitive functioning operating on its quote unquote, well, its normal levels, its pre-pandemic levels, uh-huh. or holding yourselves to those standards or anything of that nature. And so, yeah, what you said, that there are a lot of folks who are still expecting to work as if you could just transfer, upend your entire life, be at home with your kids, switch all your teaching online, have massive fear and anxiety about the future, and then still be producing articles at the same rate. And like you said also, that some folks there is an imperative to produce if you want to get tenure or you want to get a job mm-hmm. at some point mm-hmm. or your own personal, you know, goals of research and productivity, as far as those are reasonable for you at this moment. And so, yeah, we want to support that as much as we want to tell people to just chill out and be gentle with themselves.
Right. And so what's really interesting about this article, and it ties in so closely to what I'm doing with these writing groups and what I'm learning in these writing groups, because working with 10 people at a time, 3 times a day, is you get a whole, this really fascinating insight into what's happening in the world of academics from all over the world
right.
at every stage, mm-hmm. right? From the ABDs all the way to the people, to the associates, to the department chairs mm-hmm. and what they're struggling with. Some stress is good, right? I think I talked about this in the last podcast. Some stress is good. Mm-hmm. We need stress to move forward. Mm-hmm. When we get too much stress, we tip over into inactivity.
Right.
So there are a whole bunch of people out there for whom that writing and the producing and the thinking, it's a really good part of their life. Mm-hmm. And they want to get back to it. Mm-hmm. But when they try to do it, it pushes over into the, I can't figure out how to do this. So right. What this article suggests and what I work with people every day on is how do you lower your expectations of output?
Yes.
Right? How do you start to create little tiny chunks that you can just work on all day long? And that they break right. it down into a whole bunch of different chunks, right? Because right. they're talking about parents.
Yeah. Well, I just want to, you know, pause to give a shout out to the article because I just really like it. It starts out with this idea of, and they're both academic moms specifically, right. of struggling so much with their kids at home, with right. just like we said, you know, having to somehow homeschool your kids or something, provide them with some content and take care of them and also do your work, switch your classes. And the idea that, first of all, just knowing it's not, if you're overwhelmed, it's not just you. Oh. It's not just you. Please, 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 you know, understand that everyone or almost everyone in similar, who have similar stressors is in the same boat.
And I would argue that you can be at home by yourself with your cat.
Of course.
And you have, I mean, I understand that
I
there are additional
stress. I don't mean to dismiss
stress.
That. Right. I just wanted to make sure that right. the academic parents knew, felt like they had a, you right. know,
and
a
I,
recognition.
And I totally understand that. And I want the academic parents, especially the academic women parents, because you end up structurally carrying more of the load. Absolutely. I really want to, you know, send endless amounts of empathy that way. Mm. And if you're listening and you're not in that category, I want you to remember that you are probably experiencing all of these same things mm-hmm. in a different way. So don't exceptionalize yourself and think, well, I should be doing more
right.
because I don't have a kid at home.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we could do next week, we could do this same concept, but for academics who are at home alone.
Yeah.
Which is and just, which has this, like you said, and we, in fact, maybe we will do that episode. So know that we see you, all of you. And please know also that most of what we're about to say is going to apply to you as well.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So please don't
absolutely.
Feel excluded.
Right. Yeah.
But there is a motivation from their article and it is a motivation that I share, which was the data that's coming out somewhat anecdotally right now from journals that women's submissions to journals has declined rather catastrophically.
Sure.
And men's, there's been no change in men's submissions, or in fact, they have inched upwards. Mm-hmm. So basically, we're seeing in real time the rollback of opportunities for women to advance their careers because of the unequal burden at home. Assuming, this is, of course, assuming a heterosexual parental situation where there is a man and a woman and the man is not pulling his weight and all of the burden or 90% of the burden is falling on. So that was the motivation, I believe, for their article and the motivation for what we're talking about. So right. I just wanted to give, I wanted to read just a little excerpt from it because I think their writing is very compassionate and kind, but basically some days are better than others. As old routines fall away and new ones pop up, by no means do we have anything figured out. I like they say anything. Not everything, but anything.
Anything.
We don't have anything figured out. And we can't resolve societal inequities. But we have a few realistic ideas about how faculty members can cope with working from home and parenting 24/7 in a pandemic. Note, our experience is based on working from home with young school-aged children, academics with babies, rambunctious toddlers, or children with disabilities may be able to modify some of our suggestions to suit very different needs and attention spans. If nothing else, we hope the following invites an honest conversation and a reassurance that you are not alone.
Right. And I think that's the two things that I thought were so valuable about this is, number one, just telling you, look, this is really hard. It's going to take restructuring. Here are some ways we would suggest doing it, and it's not going to work for everybody, but just some things to think about. But the mm-hmm. other thing, of course, that resonated for me because it's the way I coach, mm-hmm. is the value of breaking things down into small, mm-hmm. bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
To stop taking on, you may have been saying before this all happened, you know, I'm going to write my book this year.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you as a productivity coach, that's not a sentence that you want to say every day as you wake up. I need to work on my book. I need to write my book. Mm-hmm. I need to get this article written. Mm-hmm. When I first started the writing groups, I would have people tell me very clearly what they were going to do. We do it in 15-minute chunks. 15 minutes check-in, 15-minute check-in. Right. And I'd say, what are you going to do? Now, I say, what are you going to start and what are you going to move forward?
Hmm.
It's just...
Oh, interesting. Just a change of language. It's not a do. Right. It's a start.
Right.
And a move forward.
Because...
By the way, are those two different things? So in other words, they have an option of choosing start or move forward?
No, it's the start. So it where I might have said before, so tell me exactly what you're going to do with this paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I want to do is I want to connect this theory to that theory, and it's going to take about 3 sentences to do it, and that's what I'm working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now I say, what are you starting and moving forward?
I see.
I'm moving paragraph 2 forward. I'm looking at the theory.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're just making the bar, moving it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not working on my book.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I'm not working on my article.
Not working on a chapter.
I'm not working on
a
chapter. And I teach that in Unstuck anyway, but mm-hmm. this time I'm really just like get your eyes down to your feet
mm-hmm.
and take the next step.
The next
step.
Don't
look out at the marathon. Don't right. look up the hill. And so I really like that. And I like that they do that in so many categories. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the things that I really thought was so valuable for everybody and why I think it goes beyond the kid thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because their 4 categories are meals, kids, self-care, meetings, and small work-related tasks.
Yeah. 5 categories.
Did I say 4?
You may have said 4.
I think I did.
Yeah. But in any case, it is 5.
Counting. I no longer. Counting has gone away right. with the pandemic.
For sure.
My ability to process numbers has never been great.
Mine
So I think that all of those categories fit for.
They do because.
All of us.
Well, except
for
number 2 kids. And who knows, you may want to substitute students.
Right.
Or parents,
for example,
or, whoever. People have lots of caregiving
right.
obligations right now and always that could be inserted in there. Before we get into them, I want to mention that they do say prior to that list of 5 things, each night we set a list of tangible and realistic tasks that we hope to accomplish the next day. The list is subdivided into those 5 categories. So the technique here is to do it the night before.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's, I'm not actually weighing in on, I'm not really, it sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I do it mm-hmm. and I'm not saying it would work for me because I'm not sure and I haven't tried it.
Right.
But it sounds good. And so we're putting it out there as something that might, as a resource that might work.
And I can say that for me, the way my days roll, if I tried to do that at night, I'm too exhausted.
Uh-huh.
The day exhausts me so much. I'm talking to so many people. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the screen so much. I'm holding space for so many different ideas.
And emotions.
And emotions that if you asked me at 7 o'clock at night to plan the next day,
you're saying.
I would use my entire pandemic theme song is Beyonce's Sorry Not Sorry. So it'd be like middle fingers up, raise them up high. It's not middle fingers up. I don't have the lyric right, but you know what I'm talking about,
right.
people. Right? Sorry. Not sorry. So what I do in the morning is that I actually lay it out before I get out of bed.
Oh, there you go.
So I actually lie in bed and it's a little bit of what I use as the sort of propulsion fuel to get me out of bed as
mm-hmm.
I'm lying there and I'm looking at another day of this. I start listing
mm-hmm.
the 5 things I'm going to work on.
Wow.
And I just keep saying them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I look at my calendar, then I say, okay, meditation, morning pages,
mm-hmm.
exercise, breakfast, meeting 1, interview intervention, lunch, meeting 2, and I just keep saying it so I know what the day is going to be
right.
and kind of use it as a way to get me out of bed.
That's great. That sounds way better than my system.
Lie in bed and existential despair.
Lie in bed and clutch my head.
Weep.
Weep.
I didn't say that it doesn't involve some weeks. Say that they're mutually exclusive. You know, I never want to give, you know, I give people all sorts of systems. I'm a system person.
You are.
I totally
you are.
Love
you
systems,
still are.
Right?
I hate systems.
I'm distinctly aware. So I but one of the things that I want, and academics are so interested in getting an A plus. Mm-hmm. They want an A plus so badly. Mm-hmm. That a lot of times I suggest systems and then they'll be like, but I can't do it. And I say, then don't. And one of the things I do with Unstuck all the time is keep looking at what works for you. If it isn't working for you, that means the system was not the right system for you. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. So I think that's the most important thing I want people to take away from this particular episode is, keep tweaking, keep paying attention to you and say, what is the thing that actually works for me that I can push a little thing forward, that right. I can get the laundry done and I can get a couple sentences on my article mm-hmm. and I got some grading done and what had to work for me?
Right. And just to break it down even further, it's fine if you don't have five things on your list, five categories.
Yeah.
Maybe start with two, meals and meetings.
Well, and if we look back at our product.
Oh, by the way, I don't know. Did we list the five categories?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing, I just love this, our recordings during this time because.
When did we say
on a good day, we have a layout, a outline for what we're going to do.
Right.
Since this all started, it's like, we got to talk about this thing. Sit down. Okay. Hit record.
Right.
And then, did we say that already? Anyway. I digress. And now I've lost my train of thought. So
it'll come back.
Continuing to try to find a system that works for you, that goes back to the productivity pyramid that we recorded prior to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. What we are coaching is that, look, the core, the bottom of the pyramid, the most important thing is your physical well-being. So I do think that meals is a great place to start in incremental chunks. What are a way that you can make sure that with the resources that you have, that you're having the best choices that you can have around meals. So, you know, planning meals for as long as your brain will allow you to and your grocery list will allow you to, batch cooking, whatever it is, they're talking about getting it all organized and, you know, make a list and do these things.
Also getting your kids' buy-in,
yeah.
which as you and I remember, from back in the day, and right. even right now with college kids, getting their buy-in is so stress reducing. So if you talk to them and say, what are you in the mood to eat this week? And they give you a list and you write down that list. Then later on Wednesday, when they start throwing a fit, like, I don't want to eat that. You can say, but you actually, we discussed this and look, you wrote it in your own words. On the list, if they're old enough to write or whatever, draw a picture of macaroni or whatever. and that actually really works with kids.
Yeah.
When they feel like they are part of the decision-making team.
Yeah.
So
if you have the psychological bandwidth to be able to cook with your kids, which I know under stress can just be like, look, I do not have the patience while you slowly stir this.
Yeah.
This
they're
sauce.
Like saying that homemade noodles and calzones. I'm like, no, but whatever.
Yeah. So let's look at minimal viable product here instead of the fact that we're going to make homemade noodles and instead
open a box of Kraft mac and cheese.
Right.
If necessary.
Yeah, but it's also about like, let's all sit down and plan the week's meals. And if one of your kids says, I want Kraft mac and cheese. And the next day is, I want to have, SpaghettiOs. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just like
maybe lower your standards of healthy, quote unquote, healthy meals a bit.
And it just so depends on where you live and what you can get access to and how much bandwidth you have to plan. And, you know, I have a client in South Africa and they get to go out once a week for grocery shopping, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to, you know, go out and do the best you can.
Sure.
So
I think a lot of academic moms,
academic mobs running through the streets demanding tenure.
have very, very, you know, they're perfectionist like they are in everything in their life. And the expectation that the kids are going to have kale every damn night. And, you know, if they're going to have pasta, it's going to be whole wheat pasta and blah, 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 blah. And again, and this is my mantra, just lower those standards. It's okay.
It is okay.
Lower those standards.
So I do think figuring out the food thing helps. I think, you know, figuring out the classroom so you know what your kids are doing, figuring out self-care, actually writing down what you're going to do for yourself. What are you going to do? What are the little things that you're going to plan during a day that are going to be the care for you?
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that in their article, they're really focused on getting themselves and their family members moving and resting yes. in some way each day. Sometimes we kick soccer balls in the yard or ride bikes around the neighborhood or hold PE in the living room via virtual exercise classes, which, by the way, you and I are both a huge fan right now of virtual exercise classes
yeah.
and do them almost every day. So that's fun. And also reaching out to family through Zoom and so on. And that's great. And I appreciate that. And it's good advice. But I want to talk to the moms and say, what is your self-care?
Right.
What are you doing? Because you need to get away from those kids, even if it's just to go into your bedroom and shut the door while they're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. That's what I would be putting in my article if I were writing it.
Right. And this is interesting because this goes back to these meetings that I was doing. So I was talking to, you know, there are 10 people on, lots of people with kids at home. So mm-hmm. lots of times kids will be coming in and, you know, we wave and say hi. But you know, I was talking to one of the people one time who was kind of at her wit's end, mm-hmm. Just not getting any space. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, for this time, when you do this writing session, you need to go in a room with a closed door. Mm-hmm. I realize that you're used to working like in the kitchen, but with everybody home, you need to go in and close the door. Mm-hmm. And for her, it was this like, right, I just need to go in a room with the door closed.
Right.
But you get so locked into how you're doing stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
That I've always worked here. Well, you always worked there when your kids were mm-hmm. off at school or mm-hmm. whatever. So first, going in and finding a room where you can close the door. Going out to the car and sit in the car mm-hmm. and write, you know?
Yeah.
I have a client who has an office in a hall closet.
Yeah,
like she lives in a small apartment. She took the hall closet and it's her office.
I love that.
And
I ordered some food from DoorDash one time and took it into the bedroom and ate it because I didn't want to just have to deal with talking to the kids or my ex-husband, all of whom are in the house right now, about what I was eating for dinner and whether they wanted to be part of it because I didn't want them to be part of it and I didn't want to even have the conversation about it.
Right.
Or have the mental load of having their opinions or judgments about what I was eating because they don't like, you know, falafel. And I'm like, I don't even want to know what your opinion is.
Yeah, because nobody is talking about the parents whose kids went off to college.
Yeah.
And their kids came back. Mm-hmm. And the crushing blows that these kids have dealt with. And mm-hmm. now they're back home. They were just living their own independent lives and get away from you.
Yeah.
They come back and they turn into this kind of needy thing.
Right.
And then resent it at the same time.
Uh-huh. So, and go back to their worst pre-college behaviors.
Yep.
And especially, you know, I'm seeing it with the freshman because he just didn't have enough time to establish himself. Whereas the junior is, you know, pretty much rolling with the punches right now in kind of an amazing way. But the freshman needed more time. And
so
pick our battles. Yeah, basically just picking the battles of organizing your kids' time, having some structure, I suppose. One nice thing, riding your bike to meet a friend and wave or chat from a safe distance or leave a chalk message on the driveway.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
Right. The chance that you get to go wander out and do something. Mm-hmm. And I would also say to you out there who have friends who have small kids and you live within biking or walking distance to them, just walking over and saying hello to those parents for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of friends who have a 2.5, almost 3-year-old and I don't know, not yet a year old. And I tell you, the looks on their face when I ride up on my bike and say, how you doing? They're just like, hello, hi, adult. So don't forget don't forget those folks.
Yeah, for
I want to push back on the homeschool thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know people I've been using that phrase, I'm homeschooling my kid. It's the same thing.
Right.
You're not homeschooling your kid. You weren't trained to homeschool your kid. You didn't plan to homeschool your kid. You're stuck at home in a global pandemic trying to make sure your kids...
You're doing triage.
Right. You're just trying to make sure they learn something. Right. And you know what? If they learn it the way a lot of homeschool systems do, they learn it experientially instead of having to like stare at a Zoom meeting. Right. So if you do baking with your kid as their class exercise in measurement, fractions, great. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know. I just feel like everybody just needs to...
Yeah.
Lighten up on themselves there about...
Go ahead.
Just lighten up. Mm-hmm.
There have been some good pieces I've seen across my screen about that, you know, what they're learning might be just that you were compassionate, kind, and gentle in learning to deal with unexpected crises. Mm-hmm. And that was the learning of this period, and not math and not reading, but kind of... character, and I don't know ways of being in the world.
And I also think, let's not make it the perfect response. Mm-hmm. That you can teach your kids how to have a really hard time and be frustrated and defeated and sad and scared and get up and plan a new day apologize for being as one of my clients said, a bag of dicks, you know, and that you can, everybody, you know, all the people who work with kids will tell you it's not that you screw up parenting. It's how you handle your screw ups.
Right, afterwards.
So you can also just be like, wow, I didn't handle that very well. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel very good. I'm confident. So, you know, I do want to, this is a big tangent. Mm-hmm. It's not really a big tangent because it ties into all this stuff because we're talking so much about family and kids. And you started off talking about this information about women are submitting less and what's this impact going to have? And we were talking about this on one of the writing calls the other day and my working with women to just say, you're going to do less. Mm-hmm. And we need to grieve that. And we also need to get righteously indignant and start to argue for a different way of doing this.
At home. Yeah.
No, a different way of doing this in the academy because the reason that this is happening is because women have been responsible for putting in place a whole bunch of mechanisms so they can continue to try to meet a bar created by a bunch of people that they're not, right? They're not the cisgendered white man living in the, you know, sitting in his studio. But women have taken responsibility for putting a ton of systems in place so they can try to approximate it, right? So I'm going to have childcare and I'm going to do this and I'm going to work at this time and women are brilliant multitaskers. Mm-hmm. We're trained from the very beginning how to multitask. And so that super skill makes it possible for us to accomplish these things with all of these things at play. Mm-hmm. So those systems that we've created get dismantled when you're stuck at home. Mm-hmm. You don't have any of the resources that you had before. Mm. And so the disparity reveals itself.
Right.
So we've been talking about it forever, but it's like reveal. Mm. So one of my clients suggested in this group conversation we were having, why don't journals for this period of time accept only 50% of their articles from men?
Yeah.
Why don't we start to see some structural change where we say we understand the disparity here and we will not publish any, we will publish 50-50. Mm-hmm. So we may get 100 submissions from men and 20 from women, but it's a 50-50 what's going in this journal.
I absolutely endorse that.
And that's where I think we have to start. I guess that's, you know, all of this, I really appreciate it. It's a coping in the moment kind of thing, but I really want us to start to in that place of discomfort that we're all feeling, start to look at what is the source of this discomfort? Mm-hmm. White supremacy and the patriarchy.
Capitalism.
Yeah, and capitalism, in case you didn't know the list. Mm. And how can we demand something different?
Right. And I want to follow up on that and say that the other thing that is noticeably absent from this article and from our conversation so far is telling men to get their shit together.
Yeah.
And just pull their fucking weight.
Right.
Because they don't.
Right.
Across the board.
And don't start, like you people, I'm just going to tell you right now, Don't add us in the mentions about my husband. Don't do it.
I'm so lucky. My husband. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it because all you're doing is exceptionalizing an individual and ignoring the structural reality.
Right. And it's the same not all men, not all white people bullshit. Right. Don't do it.
Not all husbands. It's bullshit and it's gaslighting and I don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it. So the fact is, and if you're a man listening and you're like, well, I just want to tell you how I do. Yeah, I don't want to hear that either. What we want to acknowledge is that men just don't pull their weight as a gender at home, and that it isn't just that you quote unquote help around the house and that you'll wash the dishes when your wife asks you. It's the mental load that women and mothers shoulder of actually keeping 50 things balls in the air at one time of knowing, oh, so the first child has an assignment due tomorrow. Second child has an assignment due in a week. We have to have a meeting with so-and-so. Oh, and their doctor called. We have to reschedule their appointment. And that mental load is what men don't share, even if they occasionally sweep or cook a meal or whatever. Right. And that's what has to be equalized.
It's the what needs to be done question. Mm-hmm. That is so often the case of supportive men. Mm-hmm. What needs to be done? Like, that's the work right there, bud.
Mm-hmm. Figure it out.
Look and go, oh, these things need to be done. Start inserting yourself in the figuring out what needs to be done part of the category instead of the what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I'm here. I'm doing 50%. Do 50% of the imagining of mm-hmm. what of the load, mm-hmm. 50% of all of those things.
And not just fighting some rear guard action, but actually jumping out ahead in a proactive way to take burdens off of the family.
Right. And let me just say to the very organized, very, I'm used to running this ship, academic women out there.
Now there's another layer.
Right?
Yeah. We know this one.
We know this one, right? Where have you created systems of enabling your male partners to not do that because mm-hmm. you've decided not to trust them to
right,
do that.
Because you're a control freak.
You're not as good at that as I am. Mm-hmm. So of course your kid comes to you because somehow there's a, you know, not saying dad can handle it. And it doesn't even have to be in a heteronormative model, because I think that happens in queer families as well. There's the I'm organizing and there's the I'm not. Mm-hmm. But look at the places where you are getting hoisted by your own petard because you're like, I'll handle all of this because right. I don't like the way you're doing it.
How many women do you have on coaching calls who say, well, I can't right. do that because my husband wouldn't be able to? It's like, oh, no, that's learned helplessness
right.
that you have participated in.
Right.
I'm not saying the patriarchy didn't make his learned helplessness possible, but you have agreed to it in some contract, unspoken contract or spoken one that you made in your relationship. And, you know, and guess what else that means? That also means that you say, okay, that's it. I listened to this episode. I'm over it. You know, three nights out of the week, you are responsible for getting dinner on the table for those kids. And guess what? Three nights a week, they end up eating SpaghettiOs out of a can. I'm not saying they have to. I'm not saying this will happen. I'm just saying let's take it as a worst case scenario. You have to sit there and say, okay, the kids are eating SpaghettiOs out of a can.
Right. Don't get on your self-righteous high horse.
Yeah, don't do it. And stay and take that time that you did not spend making anything or doing anything or cleaning up any dishes, because there are no dishes except a pot and the bowl
you microwaved it in.
Right. But, you know, and take that time. Take that time to do something for yourself, whether it's, you know, whatever that would be, self-care or productivity or whatever. Yes.
I just had this.
Kel's having a brainstorm.
I just had this epiphany, and mm-hmm. this epiphany has come up over and over again in these writing groups, but I just had this epiphany again. Mm. Here's the thing, folks. If this hasn't taught you, you don't have any control. I don't know when you're going to learn it.
Right.
Right. This is the giant universal smack in the head that says, guess what? Your plans are just that. Mm. They're not the truth. They're not reality. They're just plans. Mm. And if you can right now notice the places that you are trying to maintain, like grip finger control, where you are in an adversarial relationship with something because you want it to be different than it is, mm-hmm. that adversarial relationship is the thing that's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And so if you can break these down into tiny chunks that you don't have to fight with, which is basically what they're saying, let's get these down little so you don't have to fight with it.
Right.
And if you read this article and you started fighting with it, that's the perfect moment where you're like, oh, I'm going to fight with this homemade pasta bullshit, which is what I would do. Like, homemade pasta?
Are you kidding me?
The only person I see make homemade pasta right now is Roxanne Gay. She makes homemade pasta, but she lives at home with her. She's self-quarantined with her partner, I think.
Yeah.
Her fiance. I think they're together. Yeah, they are, because she makes meals for her. She has a lot of expansive time, and that's what she does to soothe herself.
Right.
I'm thinking if you're home with any age of kid.
That is literally the last thing I would do with kids. I mean, making homemade pasta is frustrating under the best of circumstances.
I just don't have that bandwidth right now. I barely have the bandwidth to figure out what to feed myself, and then I get mad at the dishes.
Right, exactly. I mean, she also mentioned chocolate chip cookies, and that's another thing. But yeah, whatever.
And if you have kids who like to bake, I think that's great, as long as it feels like. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that all of this episode can be wrapped up with, look at the places that you're in a fight and figure out ways to get out of the fight.
Yes.
And do it by taking tiny bites, tiny chunks.
Yep.
Get out of the fight.
Yep. Yep. I agree. My natural biorhythms are to stay up till like 2 a.m. and sleep until 10.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that about myself. I don't know, but I do. Don't at me.
I just still don't understand that.
I know you don't, but whatever.
I'm still mad at myself.
For 50 years, I've been beating myself up for that, not that long.
Does that feel good?
No, it feels bad. Stop coaching me.
How's that stick in the middle of your forehead feeling?
Anyway.
The dent picking up
I am not listening. Anyway, I am... But I am making more and more peace with it, because it is just what happens. It just keeps happening. And so I am certainly, there are fewer days that I beat myself up. Anyway, I was trying to give it as an illustration, but it doesn't always work. But we've been talking a while, and I want to make sure we mention category 4 is meetings, and category 5 is small work-related tasks. And then what we've said earlier is more valuable than these two things. But basically, make sure you make a list of the day's Zoom and phone meetings in one spot. And that is important, because it is really easy to forget.
Yes.
And I have missed a couple things in this kind of the chaos of this pandemic. So, you know, just a simple mechanism of making sure, use Google Calendar and make sure everything is written down. And don't let even 5 minutes pass between committing to a meeting and writing it down, because in those 5 minutes, 16 different things are going to happen. And Trump is going to say something, or Pence is going to show up without a mask at a hospital. You're going to lose your shit, and then you're going to forget to write it down. Did you want to say something about that?
Yeah, and in terms of the Zoom meetings, I think the most important thing that they have in this thing about Zoom meetings is the first thing. Can I cancel this meeting?
That is actually in a separate, they have a whole thing in the article, and I really want to encourage you to look at it. This is below the categories, the 5 categories that we were working from now. But then they have this whole long thing about Zoom meetings, and it's like, can I just cancel this meeting? Oh my God, yes.
The first thing. Like, the first question should be, is this necessary? Can this be done in an email? Because I'd like to do this in an email.
Mm-hmm.
These departments holding all these meetings. Oh, come on, people.
Yep.
Get a grip.
Yep. And get up and move. Just because you're on the Zoom meeting doesn't mean you have to sit in one place. You can actually do it on your phone, perhaps, and walk around or be on your treadmill or sitting outside or something.
Treadmill. Because we all have treadmills in our offices. I know.
A lot of people have treadmills at home or whatever, like, you know, those various machines that people use. You could literally have a Zoom meeting.
I know. I'm just saying that in the land of, if we look at the global academic world, the people who have exercise equipment in their house is fairly tiny and fairly class-based.
Yes.
And so I do think you can move around. I do also think you don't have to be on camera the whole time. You can turn the camera off.
Well, that's true.
You can tell people, I'm listening, but I'm doing X. And
you know what else you could do? You could turn your camera off and do a whole little yoga thing, routine.
Or wash the dishes
or
whatever.
If you wanted to. Yeah.
You can listen to Zoom meetings. I learned this from my niece who is doing all the AA meeting. I mean, all her recovery meetings right now on Zoom.
Oh.
And she said that they were making her so stressed out. Uh-huh. And then her sponsor basically said, you don't have to have the camera on.
Wow, that's great.
And I was like, right. Mm-hmm. I'm not, because it was this like, am I not engaging with the meeting if I'm not seeing it? It's like, no, you can engage with the meeting listening to it.
Yeah. In my dance Zooms, I have one of our members has her sort of mascot stuffed animal and this like weird doll that's with this extremely weird face and puts that doll up in front of the camera. And that's how we know she's there. So it's actually, I mean, it's no different than turning it off. It actually, it's a little bit sweeter than just having the black. Of mm-hmm. having turned off your camera. She leaves her camera on, but she puts this doll up every time. And it's like, oh, that's Chris.
Right. I think that I have a very large rainbow unicorn that I bought at the beginning of this pandemic. So I could just, you know, because it's very large and you can hug something. I think that I should just start putting that up as my avatar when I'm meeting with clients. Mm-hmm. They can just talk to the unicorn. Mm-hmm. Nobody would like that at all. But
anyway. Yeah, true.
All right. So yep. We got to wrap this up.
And then small work-related tasks, category five. And I just want to say, and this is circling back around to where we started, that even these two authors say, these are small things, emails, grading, letters of recommendation, paperwork, recording. We do when the kids are occupied. The big work tasks, such as manuscript revision or curriculum redesign, are off the list because getting to them is unrealistic right now, and that is okay.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that if you can find a group to be accountable with, if you can find a group of people that you are, I'm going to offer you this model, okay? And if you can find a group of people to do it with, I think it's an incredibly valuable model. And I have a bunch of clients with kids who mm-hmm. are moving things forward in tiny ways.
Even the big things.
Even the big things. Mm-hmm. They're working on revisions. They're working on all that. Their kids are coming in and out of the room, you know, but they're there. And what they're doing is we're meeting for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We get on the call. Everybody goes around and says their name, where they are, their discipline, and what they're going to work on in the first 15 minutes. They just go around.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, okay, timer's on. And everybody just sits there and works for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then we come back on. What'd you move forward? What are you going to do next? Mm-hmm. And somebody invariably says, I got completely derailed by having to be the social studies person or this, you know, my kid
ran
woke
in
up from the nap.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I have a mom of a much smaller baby who, you know, the baby woke up unexpectedly. So now here's the baby, you know, sitting there with her. But there's something about that collective mm-hmm. shared experience that even if they only got a couple things done, it just feels like I'm still part of a department in
right,
a way.
Right.
I'm still part of a thing.
Yeah, an intellectual community.
An intellectual mm-hmm. community. People love to hear about each other's work. They love to learn from each other how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So if you can get that group,
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
I mean, get a group of people and say, and there's an app called Forest, I think it's called. That is a place where you can go electronically and go gather together and write, and you plant something about the way you're doing it plants trees and you're planting a forest.
Oh
and
my God.
I have a bunch of people who use it and they love it.
That's
so
sweet.
Look for places where you can collectively work too. Like you can, you're not all in this, you know, out there by yourself,
yeah.
but you've got a group of people that you're doing it with. Because this article starts off with someone getting in touch saying, are you having a hard time?
Mm-hmm.
What I'd love for everybody to do is get a cohort to get together a couple times a day to say, we can just do a little bit and
yeah.
we're here together doing this.
And you're not alone.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the message.
And that's the message. Alone. All right. Take care, everybody. Stay safe.